Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Stephen Hubbard from Spree. Spree is a live shopping platform that streams simultaneously to your social media accounts as well as your own e-commerce website. Now, I featured a few of these platforms on the podcast before. Lots of them have come and gone from the market over the years, but Spree believes they have cracked the code to help encourage consumers to adopt live shopping into their lives in the attempt to catch up with the adoption of live shopping in Asia. Fantastic conversation. I learned a ton. We dug deep. I hope you enjoy the conversation. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my pleasure to welcome Stephen Hubbard to the pod. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me today.
It's absolutely lovely to have you along for the ride today. And you are now the non-executive director of Spree. But before we get into that, it's a live stream shopping platform, and we'll go into the nitty-gritty of that shortly. But as I look back across your career, you had something like 16 previous career experiences spanning everything from retail to tech to entrepreneurship, startup land, established businesses, advisory roles, building roles. You've led a very eclectic career to date, haven't you?
Thanks, Jason, very much for reminding me. Yeah, it's 30 years in retail in one shape or another, working in advancing customer experiences and in customer engagement over the last 2 years, specifically working around live commerce. So yes, I've had the pleasure of living around the world, being a nomad for a while, running various size companies, both public and private. But along the way, obviously, the biggest goal for me is I'm an evangelist around customer engagement and customer experience and how to make that customer journey a little bit more interesting, let's say, for the consumer out there, whether that's com, bricks and mortar, or obviously now where we are today around the live shopping boom over the next couple of years.
And I want to just double click on what you just said. One thing you said there, which was I've been in the live shopping space for 22 plus years. I didn't know. So help me understand what your definition of live shopping, what is that? Because when we think of live stream shopping, that hasn't been around for 22 years. So when you think of the concept of live shopping, what does that actually mean to
you? I think in the early days, it's home shopping. The average customer would know it as television, good old terrestrial TV, and obviously now it's streamed as well. But yeah, the good old days of HSN and QVC and Ideal World, around the world itself.
HSN.
Tuning into people's living rooms and kitchens and engaging them and entertaining them as well, which I think the entertainment factor is really important there. And yeah, so I started in the good old days doing a startup company in the UK called BidUp TV and Price Drop, which became the biggest competitor to QVC in Europe. And we grew that business from zero to 300 million revenue in 2.5 years. Back in 2002, 2005, a very interesting journey, I would say, in the entry and it's a live commerce or home shopping as we know it. And yeah, so the whole emphasis there was though using and generating commercial content. So when I talk about live commerce, it is really about using video content and streaming that content through different mediums to engage with the audience.
It's a fun fact here, and I don't think I've ever mentioned this on the podcast before, but because you did, I'm gonna bring it up. So I was raised in the States, lived in New Zealand for almost 30 years, now live in Mexico, and I built my career in digital in New Zealand primarily, and in Australia too. But I was there, and I was involved with the company that brought the first home shopping channel to New Zealand. Now, it didn't end up lasting for very long, but they made a splash. Everything was slowly moving to digital. They executed a lot of the transactions digitally through e-commerce, but they had a 24/7 shopping channel. I think it was called the Home Shopping Channel. I think that's what it was called, actually. And it was a full-on TV production style environment with a full-on production studio. And it was like I was invited to their launch event. And it was it's weird, you know, having not been associated with TV before in terms of what is production. Like, I don't work in that industry. I've never been exposed to that industry apart from, I remember way back when I was a kid, I went to see a game show, a TV game show being filmed, and a couple of other things like in studio, but I'd never worked in that industry. And to get a glimpse behind the scenes of what TV production looks like for real live shopping, man, it is quite the endeavor. It is not something that you should go into lightly. And it is phenomenally expensive, isn't it?
That's right. 20 years ago, it shows you how far technology has come, as we'll talk about that shortly. But yeah, back in the early 2000s, the cost and the infrastructure to be able to support live broadcasting was exponential and extremely difficult, I think, for a lot of businesses to make profits unless you really gathered that community, as I would say, and gathered that customer on the journey, and he and she came back regularly to purchase. So it's very challenging to make the business work from a profitable perspective. And I think certainly over the last 20 years, as technology has got better and broadband has appeared, so people can actually start streaming rather than just going down the cables, you know, obviously it becomes a lot more affordable and a lot more accessible for not only consumers, but also for retailers and brands to engage through the streaming and video routes with their customers.
And that's a beautiful segue into what you're doing now over at Spree. And Spree is really a live shopping platform. It's a live stream shopping platform for e-commerce brands.
Yes.
And brands that are very strong on social as well. And what's interesting is that we've had, at least in the United States in particular, but the West, full stop, even the UK. The UK, from a Western country perspective, the UK has the highest penetration of e-commerce as a percentage of retail of any other country outside of Asia, really. And that's phenomenal. The UK is beating the US. It's beating ANZ. It's beating all comers. Really, Britons have embraced this whole e-commerce thing wholeheartedly. We're now well into double digits now. But still, having said all that and seeing the rate of growth through COVID, for some reason, it doesn't seem Westerners have embraced live shopping yet in the way that the Asian countries have, particularly China and Korea. It seems like we just have this reticence to live shopping. So before we get right into the tech, and let's keep a 30,000 foot view for a second, why do you think there has been such a resistance to live stream shopping in the West so far? Because even TikTok couldn't make it work, really.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I spent a lot of time in Asia Pacific myself, living in Hong Kong for 8 years. I think the reality is that a technology called WeChat over in China and Asia that people use on a daily basis and have done for about 8-10 years and have got used to the video communication, the way that video is used. The West is very much behind even from that kind of technology. And yes, people now, because of COVID, a lot more people are streaming and using different services and apps around chats and live chats. But the reality was Asia was very much more advanced. So if you rewind 10 years ago and what was going on, and then certain technology platforms like WeChat were using in preference to emails, believe it or not, and just general chat. For me, it doesn't surprise me that the West is still struggling around the usage and education around video content and certainly commercial content. So over the last 8 months, people like TikTok Shop launched and trying to commercialize that community. It's a lot more challenging, I think, than even they could ever imagine, especially when you look at the value of that market in Asia. Now, this year, live streaming will be $604 billion, you know, which is just absurd if you think about it. The US, as you'll know, is mostly more like 30 to 40 billion. So the differential shows you the massive, what I call, size of the prize for the West if we are able to get it right. And I call that, if I'm being honest with Jason, put the jigsaw together, because I think the biggest challenge for a lot of, from a Western society, is a lot of businesses have been working rather than in synergy, have been working independently. So what I've found, certainly over the last couple of years, and working around the tech side of things rather than just the retail side of things, is it how you put, and how I would look at the jigsaw and putting the jigsaw together, but you have a lot of people working in isolation. So I think since technology companies in the West have been working around live commerce, they've been working and thinking, how do we commercialize this technology? You've got retailers and brands thinking, hey, there's all this thing going on in the Far East and in China, and it's worth $640 billion. And we'd like to try and have some of that across the West. How do we utilize the technology? What is live commerce? What is social commerce? And then you've got agencies also working in isolation and going, oh my goodness, the dot-com businesses are feeling flat. They're feeling aged, you know, and haggard. How do we increase the volume of traffic? How do we help the brands re-engage their audience? How do we give the customer a better experience? And so I think that, and I think what the answer to that is, you don't know. I've sort of phrased my, you don't know what you don't know. And I think not everyone has had, not many people have had much experience around what I call live commerce over the last 20 years to understand what good is and what commercial content is in regards to making it work for the customer and educating the customer over a period of time. So I think the big thing over the next year or two, I think, and this is where Spree comes in, is actually educating the brand, the retailer, the agency, the actual consumer, and working together hand in hand and putting that jigsaw together to give that enhanced customer experience that creates engagement, that creates urgency and creates conversion rates much higher than the average .com business. And in the end, obviously, a lifetime value of the customer is much, much greater for the retailer and brand.
And I think you touched on something there that really, to me, feels, I'm not a specialist in this space by any stretch of the imagination, but I watch it very closely because I consider this an entirely new channel. That's really what it is. Live shopping is a new channel. And for brands to do it, the challenge, I think, is finding out where to do it, how to do it, what the reach is, what its value is, understanding what kind of investment they need to put behind it to give it a chance at being successful. But if I was to bundle that up into a single word in the West, I would use the word fragmentation. And this is the problem. My wife's Asian. And the reality is that WeChat dominates in Asia. And it dominates from everything from in-person transactions with QR codes and connected to bank accounts and everything else. And it's really moving from the personal into the commercial on that platform. It's a seamless transition all across the value chain. And she uses it to keep in touch with her family members. She uses it for everything. And the reality is that galvanized, this whole live stream shopping thing was really galvanized in Asia, primarily by a single platform. Now, there's a couple of other platforms that have come on stream, but by far, the reality is WeChat absolutely dominates the commercial sector around live stream shopping. And what they did is they were really smart. They not only catered for personal use, they not only catered for commercial use, but they catered for influencer use. And they allowed influencers to be able to directly monetize their live streams through the platform, acting as a digital wallet for all parties. This, to me, is the genius of WeChat. We do not have an equivalent in the West yet. So what we have is we have Amazon for select merchants allowing live stream shopping on their own channels on Amazon. We have the major social media players allowing some element of live streaming depending on certain thresholds, but not really seamless live stream shopping. It'll dump you to, say, a website, but it won't automatically add things to cart from the stream. We have individual brands trying to do some element of live stream shopping on their website. And then we have what we see in the West is still the same pow play by influencers where they, regardless of where they stream from, they are the ones, because they have an existing audience that they can drive to that live stream wherever it may be. They're the ones that really drive the demand for live stream shopping, for better or for worse. That's the reality. They're going to be able to drive demand better than anybody else unless a brand is very big on social and is followed very heavily. And I feel like we don't know exactly yet who's going to take the prize in terms of live stream shopping or becoming the dominant player in the space from a tech perspective, whether it's a social platform or third-party platform like Spree. We just don't know who the winner is going to be yet. And I feel like when I look at the value prop of Spree, it's we don't know who the winner is going to be yet either, but we're going to leverage all of the major players and centralize it through our platform. So regardless of who wins, merchants win.
Yeah. So I think you touched on it really well there, Jason. I think in my experience, even 20 years ago, when we did BidUpTV and we started out in the journey of the first omnichannel business in Europe, at that point in time, Jeff was still only selling books. ASOS had just launched. Tesco's in the UK is one of the largest retailers in the UK, didn't even have a website. And I think the dot-com boom in the early 2000s in the UK took a lot longer to burn from the bricks and mortar and to have a natural evolution of retail. I think what we have now here is in UK and in the West in general is again a new industry, as you touched on, with regards to live commerce and social commerce. Yes, it's an evolution of digital retail. But for me, in my experience of going from bricks and mortar into this omni-channel approach, and where you've got the websites and you've got video content that's coming back into your website and is helping commercialize and helping convert at a much higher rate, you've suddenly got a very big difference in regards to the customer experience and enhanced experience with video content and commercial content. And again, it's a natural evolution of the dot-com era. So for me, this is very much a new industry. And I think because of that, you're absolutely right. I think there is a number of technology companies that have been trying out over the last 2 to 3 years in building certain platforms to enhance the customer experience. But at this present moment in time, no, there's not one destination. And I think that's where Spree and obviously certain shareholders of Spree, as in the Bestseller Group and the Paulson family, they themselves see the massive opportunity along with the main leadership team in growing Spree to become the forerunner and front runner of the live commerce space in the West. And I think it's very probable that will happen, and very quickly, because I think in the last year, Spree alone as a platform has worked with over 80 brands, driving more than 40,000 live shopping experiences, over 10 million products sold, which equates to almost 200 million in revenue just in that short period of time. And that's really about, and the real interesting thing about Spree, it's about going through the education. So Spree as a business has spent a lot of time in the last year educating brands, retailers, agencies, and the consumer around what good looks like and how easy it is and how commercial it can be around going live. And it's an educational process, no different to, again, that's why I said about the dot-com boom in the early 2000s. I think certainly the West, though, is most probably 5 to 8 years behind the East and understanding the technology and how it works and how video and certainly commercial content works.
And do you think that let me wind this back a little bit. So I've seen probably 20 major live stream shopping platforms come and go over the last few years, have pivoted, some have disappeared entirely. I've had, I think, 2 or 3 of them on the podcast, and I think all of them have either pivoted or completely disappeared from the market altogether because they just could not make the commercials work. They couldn't grow fast enough. They couldn't develop a go-to-market that stayed ahead of costs of development and interconnectivity and integrations, et cetera. And I feel like this market has been seriously challenged to the point where some of the major e-commerce platforms out there have just added live stream shopping to the platform. So it's native. It's out of the box with some e-commerce platforms. And I feel like the go-to-market here, as you alluded to, is largely educational to start off with, to be an ambassador for this model of commerce and for this channel of commerce. And it feels like, unless someone, obviously, I don't know the background or the history of the company, and in all transparency, I've never used Spree before, so I'm not directly familiar with how exactly it works or integrates with your e-commerce website, et cetera. But I'm sure it's similar to other platforms that have done similar things. Yeah. But it feels like whoever's going to make a really good independent crack at this outside of the major social channels and Amazon, et cetera, they're going to have deep enough pockets to stick at this long enough to where the education can seep down from them into the market. And because they were one of the first to market, they have first mover advantage, so that when people start to think live shopping, maybe they only think of Spree, for example. That's the name that comes to mind. Oh, let's try this live shopping thing. Oh, let's do Spree because we've got so much content out there from them. We've got such an educational thing out there from them. We've seen them playing in our industry for years, and they become almost the default mindset in the category, or the default brand in the category. Is that kind of what you guys are trying to achieve by doing what you're doing?
Yeah, I think persistence is the key. I think the educational cycle over the last couple of years has been critical. I do think TikTok and TikTok Shop have helped that educational process in the West to a large extent. And I think along with Spree and some other platforms have been trying to do the same. I think you're right in that a number of great platforms actually have come along 2-3 years ago and actually have now disappeared. And I think that's all about time. As we know in business in general, especially from a technology point of view, if the end user is not ready to use it, even though how good the functionality and capability of the platform, it just won't exist unless they've got extremely deep pockets. So I think the most important thing now where we are on Spree's journey is that we've come along over the last 2 years to the point whereby we've got great investors who believe, by the way, and have very strategic experience around retail and commerce and see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that persistence is really important to educate, as you mentioned, both the consumer, but the brands, the retailers, the manufacturers, general commercial bodies as well in industry around the world. I'm talking like governments as well, and understand how important this technology will be for the consumer and for businesses going forward and how it helps support businesses' growth. So there's a lot of good to come out of it, but I think it's about being persistent over the next 12 to 18 months But what I'm seeing personally and talking to brands and retailers, more and more brands are open to utilizing various platforms and technology. And the great USP, so the great unique selling point with Spree and why it's becoming more and more successful, you know, month to month, is because we as a business are able to allow the brand or retailer to go live within their own website, but also utilize their own social media platforms, so Facebook and Instagram, and going live simultaneously. So simulcasting the live content through all these mediums at the same time. But the beautiful thing is, and this is where I think retailers and brands have been very skeptical and historically about the customer journey. At the end of the day, they want to protect their brand. They want to, you know, protect the customer journey and the end customer journey. And historically, where the customer journey would end up is within a technology company, and they would then transact outside of that customer brand journey. And then they would also, the brand themselves would not have the data of the consumer. They would not have the actual money from that transaction, and they wouldn't have the CRM or the actual data of that customer habit. And so because it was out of their ecosystem, a lot of the brands and retailers, I think, just felt very nervous around the technology itself in the whole live commerce space. Now, what Spree allows that brand and retailer to do, which is why it's so exciting for me and hence me joining the board, was more that the actual consumer stays within that CRM journey of the brand. He or she can transact within a Facebook and Instagram, within their own website, of course, but outside in the social means. But actually, the transaction is done within the ecosystem of that brand or retailer. And because of that consistency of approach, the brands and retailers themselves are comfortable because they suddenly have the customer data. They're happy that he or she is having the same consistent journey to the normal .com and e-commerce journey. And they're happy because they've got the money within their own ecosystem as well through that actual transaction. So I think it ticks a lot of boxes, not only from the brand's CRM and process of the actual consumer, but actually also the fact that at the end of the day, the data, which is, as we all know, is very important in enabling to give that return customer the best experience, is then suddenly controlled by the retailer and brand, not by a large technology conglomerate.
Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening. And I think that this is a real key point. When we compare, and you can understand why the social channels want the transaction to stay within the social channel. It makes sense, right? And Instagram recently changed their rules around Instagram shop and stores, where they used to allow you either to redirect the transaction to be completed on an e-commerce store, basically leaving the social experience to complete the transaction from, say, an ad. Whereas now, no, you have to complete the transaction within Instagram, and then they'll send the transactional information off to the brand to be fulfilled or whatever the case may be. Now, you can understand why that is, because it's a terrible, and I know because I've tried to do this experience through Instagram before, it is an absolutely shocking experience when you click on a product, say for an ad, for advertising on Instagram, and all it doesn't even take you to necessarily the product page of that product with it. It doesn't even, in that journey, clicking out of Instagram, it doesn't even add that product to the cart by default. It dumps you basically to the homepage, and you got to find that product. You got to add it to your cart. So you can understand how they don't want you to just shop on Instagram. They want you to buy on Instagram or be able to buy through Instagram. And that makes sense because it's a very disjointed journey when you can't in the experience. And I think that's what WeChat got right from day one. They didn't want you just browsing and interacting with the brand. They wanted you transacting without leaving the social feed. And that was the genius. And I think that's why it had high uptake, because people never wanted to leave WhatsApp for anything. They wanted to do every single thing directly within the platform. And that's why it became a super app over time, with a wallet, with basically banking services and everything else. It had to, because they realized our users don't want to leave this experience to go and interact with some crappy website somewhere. That's not what they want to do. And Instagram, I see, yes, there was a bit of a data grab there. Of course, there's a data grab there. There always is. But I think they got it right in terms of forcing brands to allow the transaction to be completed in the feed. That makes sense to me as a user thinking, if I put my consumer hat on versus brand hat on that I'm trying to help. Of course, the brand would prefer that they go to the website and have the branded, full branded experience. But as a consumer, I don't want to leave my feed. I don't want to leave the platform. Even if I'm on WhatsApp and for some reason I wanted to transact with a brand, I don't want to leave WhatsApp to go to a website and go through that whole shenanigans when I should be able to store my payment details. I should be able to store my address details. I should be able to store all that stuff in the social platform and just to be retrieved in platform to be able to complete the transaction. But to your point, if you can combine the best of both worlds, if you can combine that best of live shopping experience, if you combine the best of the feed experience, but make it super, super seamless to transact through the brand's overarching experience, then I feel like we're creating a bit of a hybrid model that might just work for consumers. And I feel like that's what you're trying to create.
That's right. And I think that's what Spree's definitely created over the last year. And hence, obviously, the large amount of engagement from the brands and retailers and from the consumers. And obviously, the numbers I spoke about earlier, the transactions, the level of transactions over the last few months alone. And I think that's purely because at the end of the day, the brands suddenly are thinking, oh, okay, and that's great. As you say, it's a hybrid in that people are coming into the Instagram, coming into Facebook, looking through obviously the new normal feeds and then able to seamlessly transact. But obviously going back into obviously the actual brand experience. And I think so it's the best of both worlds for all parties, including Spree, obviously the actual social media platforms and also the brand stroke retailer. So I think there's a lot of wins there. And I think at the end of the day, the main win is the consumer, as you mentioned, and that yourself or anyone else could transacting through those mediums, it becomes a lot more seamless and a lot more enjoyable. And I think that's because now, and that's why now I think Spree is seeing conversion rates as high as 20 times the normal retail or brand conversion rates. And they're seeing checkout rates of more than 60%. And the dwell times are a lot longer within these social platforms, and people are watching the commercial content and engaging in commercial content. And obviously, the big part of that social commerce elements is that people can engage directly and talk around and ask questions with the people, the creators or the brands generating that commercial content. So it's real-time feedback and question and answer sessions. So that's again why it becomes a lot more engaging as commercial content.
And walk me through the mechanics of this just a little bit here. So if I'm watching a brand's live stream on, let's say, Facebook, how would I actually, let's say it's a fashion brand and they're showing a t-shirt that I go, oh, that's a cool t-shirt. I'd love to buy that right here, right now. I just need to make sure that they've got it in my size and my color and whatever. So what would be the mechanics from watching that stream on Facebook to actually complete the transaction as a consumer?
Okay, so if you imagine, obviously, the content is live, the expert or the presenter is talking around the product and you're there going, oh, that looks beautiful product. It's great value. I'd like to buy it. Basically, within the screen, there's an overlay that says this product is shop one. So there's a code, so a product code. All you do as a consumer is you put into your chat shop one as a customer. That will automatically send a message to your messenger, yes? And then it basically confirms your purchase in the cart and you just press purchase because your details are there and the transaction happens and you get confirmation back to your messenger that actually is transacted. So everything is done within that journey and singular journey. And actually it's very simple and straightforward. So at the end of the day, the checkout is very seamless. And for the consumer, they think it's part of that journey through Facebook, let's say, but actually it's gone through the actual web shop and the checkout of the brand. But again, it's very seamless. And it's about it's about the product code and entering the product code and then obviously going through that checkout and transacting. But all the confirmation comes back through your messenger. And so everything is there for you to see. And as you say, then becomes very straightforward for the consumer, but they've had a great experience and seamless experience. But at the same time, the brand has that customer and transacting within their own environment.
And so does it basically create a hyperlink in Messenger that you just click on the hyperlink? It takes you to the brand's cart with the item already added to the cart. You finalize your address and payment details in their cart. and complete. So you do actually get redirected to the brand's website to actually execute the transaction, because you still need to put in your payment details, address details, et cetera, until such time as Facebook allows you to have a Facebook wallet where this these details are stored, and then they can be transmitted as part of the the link.
Correct. Yeah, that's right. And hopefully that will happen shortly in the forthcoming months or years. But yeah, but for the customer, obviously they're not seeing that change as much, and the look and feel is fairly consistent.
It's an embedded browser, right? Directly within Messenger.
Correct. Yes. So it's a lot easier for the customer to understand. And it doesn't feel like they're going in and out of various pages, as you say. So it's a lot more cleaner.
And Instagram, it's the same mechanic. So basically, I'm watching a live stream. In the comments, I put shop one. Then into Instagram DM, it sends a hyperlink directly to my Instagram DM. I click the link. It opens an embedded browser in Instagram DM, complete the transaction, hit the back button from the embedded browser, and it takes me straight back in Instagram DM. And then from there, I hit the back button again, and I can go back to the live stream.
Correct. Yes, that's right.
Cool. Yeah. And how does that content then... I'm guessing that this becomes evergreen content. So let's say I'm talking about 5 SKUs over the period of a live stream, then presumably that live stream is then saved on your servers. And then it has an embed link or something like that, that we then can put into the product pages of all the products that we live streamed about, so that people can replay it directly from the PDP.
Correct. Yeah. And I think as long as the products can be fulfilled by the retailer or the brand, then obviously the content is there and can be shown accordingly. I think that's the most important thing, is this, as long as the products are available, then the content can be shoppable, as far as we're concerned.
And so do you see brands, like what are the percentage of brands that do a live stream and then it's in the moment, it's ephemeral, it's not meant to be reused on the e-commerce website necessarily? What is the percentage of brands that use a live stream to drive demand in the moment versus brands that are then turning that into more evergreen content to be used on the website? Is it mostly ephemeral?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's interesting, because I think as brands and retailers become more used to and more educated around the value and actually the commercial value with the conversion rates and the lifetime value of that customer, as they see that, they're using it in 2 or 3 ways. Firstly, they're launching new products. So they're actually going live and actually launching products and trialing and testing and getting immediate feedback from customers. Because I think it's live, so you're going to get this whole shoppable and social commerce feedback direct from consumer within that environment. They're then obviously taking that and taking those learnings. But there's also evergreen products, so core products within some of those shows, by the way. So some of it will be within the show. So you may have 10 products. 5 may be new, 5 of them which may be evergreen products are actually continuity products, as I call them, actually there all day long and should be all available all day long for these retailers, because actually for them they're upsells, so they're bread and butter for the retailer. But certainly that content as well can be used separately around those product lines, and so they're reusing that commercial content and making it shoppable again. So the other thing which to realize with the technology is when you're making shoppable content, if you've made the content ready, there's nothing stopping you actually making more overlays within the Spree technology to go live, or as live as I call it again, with the original content with new overlays and new deals for that product and for the consumer in the future.
It's like re-live. It's pre-recorded, but because you're pushing it into the live APIs on Facebook and Instagram, it's as if it's being broadcast live again.
Correct. Yes, correct. So again, it's actually a smart way of producing content that is evergreen, but at the same time with different arrangements in regards to the promotions for that day or that week, it can make it be live, as you say. So I think an as live, like I say, as I call it, whereby people can still engage within that content and that social environment.
Yeah. And I guess what that means is that then you can drive demand for current products, even if, but let's say they've gone out of stock previously, then they're back in stock, or maybe you only featured 2 products in the live stream, but there was actually 5 products shown in the live stream that you hadn't made shoppable previously. Now you can make them shoppable again. So it's content realization basically, without having to re-record a completely live broadcast, right? So that's pretty amazing.
And also, the other thing is, Jason, just on that, is that it also, if there are brands starting out in the live commerce space and starting with us at Spree, some of them already have product-specific content that they've made for perhaps promotions, and they can actually use that content. They don't need to go to the cost all the time of having new content, they can actually use that content and then use the overlay smartly to produce those promotions for that launch or that back in stock message, as you say.
Ah, fantastic. And do you think that cost to merchants is at all a barrier? Because all of these live shopping platforms, they're all pretty expensive. I mean, it's complex technology. It requires a lot of infrastructure. It requires a lot of product development over time. They expect new things almost every single time they log into the platform. But even for you guys, starting at $6.99 per month, $6.99, is it kroners? Is it kroners? Is that?
Kroners, yeah,
that's there? Right. Yeah. Oh, kroners, okay. So your prices aren't in USD yet or pounds. Oh, no, I guess I can convert it here, but it starts out in kroners. So if we look at USD, that's not actually too bad then. I thought kroners was dollars, but I looked at the thing and it was actually kroners. So that's actually not that bad for your basic package to start at $99 a month plus 4% of sales, then moving up to $2.99 a month plus 3% of sales, and then $9.99 a month for enterprise brands with no additional revenue component, I think, at least as far as I can tell. I don't know. Even at $2.99 a month for any, even if you are a relatively small brand, it feels like if you were smart about this and how you deployed it, this could be very cost effective for your business as an almost instant ad, instant get up and running channel that wouldn't take you hardly any time at all to start monetizing.
No, I think it's immediate monetization, as you say. And I think the great thing is because we can interface with Shopify, with WooCommerce, with Salesforce, and a number of the platforms, including Magento as well, so we can actually interface with all of them. It's actually a plug and play technology. So that $300 per month, and say you say, okay, initially we'll do it for 3 months and we'll prove the put in, you know, proofs in the pudding. We can prove to you how creative it can be and how commercially driven it can be for your sales and for the consumer. The reality is that actually when you look at overall the commercial mechanisms, we're driving incremental revenue. So how I look at it is if you're a dot-com platform or a retailer driving 2.5% to 3% conversion on your platform, you know, on average in the West, and then suddenly you're driving even 6%, the average conversion rates that we're seeing through live commerce is anything between 8% and 10%. So suddenly if it's 4, 5, 6 times your average conversion rate, that is purely incremental revenue. So those $300 per month is dwarfed by the positive impact on your revenues. And also at the end of the day, you know, when we talk about say 3 or 4% of revenues as a fee, that in itself, is a very small comparison to actually what you achieve as incremental revenues for the brand and profitability for the business.
And if a brand is spending $100,000 a month on Facebook or $100,000 a month on Google Ads or whatever, this is a pittance in comparison, right? And if you're already spending that money with those platforms, why wouldn't you want to maximize the return on that existing investment? When people actually get to your website, why wouldn't you want to maximize the return? Because you're going to dump that money into those platforms anyway, right?
Yeah, that's it. And I think at the end of the day, as a brand retailer, as you'll know, in the West, it's costing businesses as high as 25-30% of sales for customer acquisition. So if you think about the cost of that alone and dwarfing the own and deterioration of your margin, but then you think, oh, hang on a minute, for $300 a month, we can have this technology that can help and support a platform and add on to our customer experience, whereby we're getting this incremental revenue through these higher conversion rates of 3-4x, then why would we not? Because the dwell times are higher, the average order values are higher, and therefore lifetime value is significantly higher for the brand and retailer. And so it makes perfect sense commercially for any size retail business or brand to actually utilize Esprit technology.
Makes absolute sense. Now, we're coming down to the end of our time together now, and I really appreciate everything that you've shared with me today. It's been a really, again, I openly profess I'm not an expert in this space. You clearly are. You've been doing this for a very long time. You understand the buyer psychology behind all of this, and I really appreciate you sharing so openly with the audience today. But now we're at the point of the podcast where I get to flip the script. I get to hand the microphone over to you, let you ask me one question. Any question you like, can be personal or professional. So Stephen from Spree, what is your question for me today?
So from your experience with WeChat, where do you think as a single platform we are missing in the West, to your point earlier?
I think it is the walletization of the platform. To me, that feels like the glaring gap, because WeChat allows you to store all your details, allows you to store your credit card details, allows you to store your address details, allows you to store your email address and make that available to the merchant if you give permission for that to be the case. And then connecting that with the ability to do payments via QR code and many other, it transcends, it's almost an independent channel all of its own, because it can interact with the physical world and the digital world, and it acts as a physical digital bridge, to the point now where they even use WeChat QR to have access to stores that are fully automated in terms of purchasing, where you can just scan these items within a physical store. You can scan them like at a checkout, but it's a WeChat powered checkout. So we can just scan the QR code, pay for these items in person, and just walk out the door with them. It's like an advancement of the just walk out technology that Amazon is trying to build. So yeah. I feel like it's really, unless you have all of the potential customers' details centralized in one place that can be reutilized everywhere, and that's where I think blockchain will come into its own. I definitely think that walletization on the blockchain that can be selectively shared with merchants on demand by the consumer, that's going to probably make this a lot easier. But I just don't see anyone. I don't understand. I do not understand why Facebook doesn't have a wallet. I do not understand why Instagram and WhatsApp do not have a centralized meta wallet that you then can use across all of their shopping and browsing channels. It just doesn't make sense to me. I know they tried it with WhatsApp they've tried it in a few countries. I think the most recent one was Brazil, where businesses can create effectively a digital wallet environment to where they can actually complete the entire transaction directly in WhatsApp. But I think that I look at WeChat as a complete and self-sufficient ecosystem for commerce. Like, it is completely standalone. It doesn't need anybody else to be able to facilitate transactions and act like a bank. And that, I think, is the Achilles heel of the fragmentation in the West, is there's no one that's taken the lead on that so far.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think obviously that's where the Web3 arena, obviously the blockchain, as you say, I think that's where I think the evolution will come to allow the actual consumer to transact within the Western environment. I think definitely the wallet is going to be critical. And I hope that obviously we can be part of that journey at Spree and trying to, in one way or another, be part of that advanced technology to allow the consumer to have a seamless experience. So I think that's where we see ourselves as well going forward.
And for you guys, this will be my last question. Where do you guys see, is there any features and functionality in the platform or that your customers, the retailers, the brands, that they're saying, hey, we'd love to have this functionality too. Can you build this for us? And that maybe is on your roadmap. Or as you look at it across this landscape, is there any functionality that you would really love to introduce within the next 12 months that you say, yeah, we consider ourselves the market leader today, but to stay the market leader, we really need to introduce these two or three pieces of functionality to just further create a moat around what we're trying to achieve here? What's high on your priority list from a technical perspective?
So there's two things. One, I think having a destination with a simulcast, you know, Instagram and Facebook, we are also working with TikTok. So we're hoping in Q2 of next year to launch something that enables the retailer brands to go live across all those platforms. So again, increase visibility for the brand. I think the other thing that we are looking at technology-wise, there's also a B2B platform that allows actual brands to work with other brands and distributors internationally in a smarter way using video commerce.
Almost turning it into a marketplace platform, which is amazing. Yes. Wow, absolutely love it. And where do you like people to get a hold of you? Do you like people to reach out to you on LinkedIn directly, or would you prefer that they go to Spree, which I'll put it in the show notes, but it's spri.io. And I'll link to that in the show notes. How do you like people to get a hold of you guys?
Yeah, it's fine. I think, yeah, listen, by all means, approach myself or Christian or Corey, the CEO and CMO of Spree, along with myself through LinkedIn. By all means, obviously, visit us on spree.io to be able to see contact us directly as well. So quite happy though to obviously take the interest from retailers and theorists, consumers out there, if they've got any questions or any interest in the platform itself.
Wow, absolutely amazing. Stephen Hubbard from Spree, I really appreciate your time today, and I'm going to keep a close eye on the platform, and I can't wait to speak to you again soon. Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.